Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank Leroy for inviting me to speak at the symposium today. My talk today is going to be discussing, as you can see, are we wasting solar radiation in row crop production? A lot of my perspective will be not so much research that has investigated the solar corridor itself, but it will be somewhat of a review of how plants intercept solar radiation and how they utilize that for crop mass gain and for yield. With that brief introduction, I'd like to think about solar radiation interception for crop production as being an integration of the integration over time of solar radiation throughout the season. That's really what's driving crop growth and the accumulation of plant mass and yield. The talk today is going to be divided up into three main sections. We'll first just look at some theoretical considerations of solar radiation interception and how that affects crop growth. And then we'll look kind of at a historical view of the importance of solar radiation for crop mass production and for yield. And then from there, kind of some changing ideas that we have on how solar radiation may be utilized for crop growth and its necessity for crop growth. So first, this comes back to some ideas that Dennis has just reviewed. Just the basic model for crop mass, for crop solar radiation, is shown here in this analog for Beer's Law, where we have the fraction of radiation is equal to this exponential equation, where the exponential is the leaf area index and an extinction coefficient. This extinction coefficient is shown here at the bottom, and it basically represents leaves that are horizontal with an extinction coefficient of 1 to completely vertical would be a leaf extinction coefficient of 0. So the leaf angle can go from 1 to 0 in this simple model. This, however, is very much an oversimplification of what you'd expect under field conditions, and I think Dennis's work showed that as well. What you actually have, this extinction coefficient, consists of two main parts. We still have the importance here of the leaf angle. That's represented by G here. But also important is the angle of the leaves relative to the solar angle. And this angle of the leaves relative to the solar angle is affected by several different things. Its alpha value changes in response to the time of day. It changes in response to day of year, and it changes in response to latitude. So it's a very dynamic measurement when you think about extinction coefficient. It's much more complicated than just one simple value. Something else that Dennis mentioned in his presentation was that this Beer's Law analog assumes that you have a random distribution of leaves through the canopy. And, of course, whenever we have a row crop situation, that's violated. And depending upon the crop that you're dealing with and the architecture of the crop and how the crop's laid out in the field, this violation may be more or less severe. The next slide, what I want to show is we're going to assume that the leaf angle is 90 degrees completely overhead, and we're just going to look at how leaf area index affects the fraction of radiation intercepted when we change this leaf angle value. So this is looking at the fraction of radiation intercepted versus leaf area index, and the top line here in red represents the angle of the leaves when they're completely horizontal to the soil surface. And in this, you can see with a leaf area index of about 3, we're intercepting approximately 95% of the solar radiation. And when that leaf angle has a G value of 0.3, when they're more erect, we see that even at a leaf area index of about 6, we're intercepting roughly 90% of the solar radiation. Leaf area index also changes with conditions such as row spacing. And in this experiment that was conducted by Flanay et al. And published in 1996, we're looking at the extinction coefficient on the y-axis versus row spacing for a crop like sunflower, which has leaves that are more horizontal to the ground, to the leaf surface, to the soil surface. We see that as we increase row spacing, we have a decrease in the extinction coefficient. And likewise for corn would have a more erect leaf to begin with, so the extinction coefficient would be of a lower value. But we also see a declining value of the extinction coefficient as row spacing increases in it as well. The take-home message of this is that this value that we call an extinction coefficient is really quite a dynamic value. It changes under many different conditions, time of year, day of year, and certainly, as Dennis's work showed, during the time of day, and in addition to row spacing. We're really more interested in for crop production, and not so much what the instantaneous value of light interception is or radiation interception, but we want to know how much light is intercepted during the course of the season or a portion of the season. So how do we accumulate that radiation? On a daily basis, we can take the fraction of radiation intercepted and multiply it by the incident radiation. This would give you a value of intercepted radiation for the day, or over the season, you just sum those values. And I'll be showing data that illustrates this in a good bit of the talk later on in just a few minutes. This is looking at the total radiation per day versus day of the year for two different locations, Blytheville, Arkansas, with a latitude of 35 degrees, and Ogallala, Nebraska, at a latitude of 41 degrees. What I wanted to show here is that these values that I have shown represent the frost-free growing day when there's less than a 5% chance of a freezing temperature. So we have large differences in the amount of available radiation available during the growing season based upon the duration of the growing season. As you can see, at Blytheville, Arkansas, we have a growing season that's approximately 200 days long, whereas Ogallala, Nebraska, we have a growing season, as I recall, that is approximately 130 days long. So we have differences in the amount of incident radiation that's available during the growing season per day. The incident radiation values change during the course of the season, being a maximum near the summer solstice. And we see that within locations, there's also large differences in the amount of radiation that's received on any given day. We can manage solar radiation interception in our row crop production systems by looking at several different factors. We can look at population density. And as you would expect, as you increase population density, in general, you'll increase the fraction of radiation intercepted, especially early in the season. We can manage this by looking at row spacing and, to a lesser extent, row direction, whether the rows are north-south or east-west. We can look at crop maturity. How much of the growing season does the crop actually intercept that available solar radiation and take advantage of it? And we can look at canopy architecture. With that brief introduction and the ideas of a few theoretical considerations, I want to move now to more of a historical view on how we've looked at solar radiation interception and the crop response. Basically, crop growth has been looked at as being proportional to solar radiation interception, given that we have plenty of water availability and no nutritional limitations. In other words, for every unit of solar radiation intercepted, we would expect a proportional increase in crop mass, and in many cases, a proportional increase in crop yield. This solar radiation interception efficiency is represented as a long-term measurement of photosynthesis. With those factors in mind, the general idea has been that if we can increase the cumulative amount of solar radiation intercepted during the growing season, we would expect to have increased crop growth, increased crop yield compared to lesser amounts of solar radiation intercepted. And these next few slides just illustrate a couple of examples of this from the older literature. This is looking at research conducted by Scheibels and Weber and published in 1965 for soybean, where we have dry matter production here on the y-axis versus solar radiation intercepted on the x-axis. And certainly we see a very nice linear response here. And this would represent the radiation use efficiency. The units that they've used are not units that we would normally think of today. And as I converted these units to more units you're familiar with, as I recall, this was around 0.7 grams of biomass produced per megajoule of radiation intercepted, total radiation intercepted. And these would be very similar to the values that are typically reported for soybean grown under good conditions. John Monteith in 1997 published a manuscript that really formalized a lot of the ideas about solar radiation intercepted. And this slide here, we're looking at the total dry matter produced versus the incident solar radiation. He looked at many different crops that were grown in Great Britain. And in this particular graph, he plotted them all together and came up with a composite value of radiation use efficiency of around 1.4 grams per megajoule. This would be total solar radiation. These values are actually quite high and would partly be this high because this was done in Great Britain. The fraction of diffuse radiation would be considerably higher than most places in the U.S., and this increases, in many cases, the efficiency of radiation use efficiency compared to more direct solar radiation. Moving now to some changing ideas and concepts of crop response to solar radiation. At least my ideas on this have certainly changed in recent years. I mentioned before that solar radiation can be managed somewhat by looking at population density, row spacing direction, and crop maturity. I want to focus in this next section on the top three of these: population density, row spacing, and crop maturity. My interest in this originally came back from looking at research that Wiggins published in 1939 in soybean, where he was looking at yield responses to plant population density at different row spacings. At 60 centimeters, he got this nonlinear plateau type function, where at high population densities, he no longer received an increase in yield response to increasing plant population. When he moved to 40 centimeters, he got the same response, but the plateau had increased somewhat. Likewise, when he moved to 20 centimeters, he also had the same plateau-type function, but higher yields than at either of the wider row spacings. I was curious about this because my thinking was that even at high population densities, you would expect to increase the amount of solar radiation that was intercepted and perhaps increase yield. And with that in mind, we started looking at how much solar radiation was intercepted at different plant populations during the course of the season. So we're looking at light interception here, solar radiation intercepted, the fraction of solar radiation intercepted versus population density at three time points after emergence, at 11 days after emergence, at 22 days after emergence, and at 46 days after emergence. And at very early in the season, there's pretty much a linear increase in solar radiation the fraction of solar radiation intercepted in response to increased population. But very soon, this becomes highly curvilinear. And at 22 days after emergence, there's very little difference in the fraction of solar radiation intercepted between 40 and 80 plants per meter squared. By the time you reach 46 days after emergence, there's essentially no difference in the fraction of radiation intercepted in soybean. And I should say these were in 19 centimeter rows. At wider row spacings, you would expect these differences to exist longer in the season, for a greater duration during the season. But essentially, this explained to me why we were not seeing this increase in crop yield and crop mass with beyond a certain threshold. Once you're even at 40 plants per meter squared, it's very unlikely you're going to see much of a large difference in the fraction of radiation intercepted during the course of the entire growing season. It changes so rapidly. We began to look, therefore, at how differences in the duration of the cropping cycle affected the yield response, and also tied that with soybean plant population. So we're looking at soybean yield in this example versus soybean plant population. For soybean that are very, very early, maturity group zero, grown in, at a latitude of 35 degrees is a very early crop, versus a maturity group four soybean, we see these same curvilinear responses that Wiggins reported in 1939. And for both the early and the later maturing soybean, what you see in this early maturing soybean is a lot more curvature to the response than for the later maturing soybean. This type of analysis gives us a couple of different ways of looking at the yield response. This value right here, 395 for the maturity group 0 soybean, represents the asymptote, and we can calculate what is the yield of 95% of that asymptote, somewhere right around here, and what plant population is required to give that 95% of the asymptote value. So somewhere around 38 or so plants per square meter. And that's what I have plotted in the next graph, looking at a wide range of different maturities. 95% of the asymptotic yield value plotted here versus maturity groups ranging from 00 through 6. And these values at the top represent the plant population required to give that 95% of the asymptotic yield. So for a very, very early maturing soybean, 00s, we see that 99 plants per square meter are required to reach that 95% of the asymptotic yield. And it very, very quickly decreases. Maturity group 0, 50, maturity group 1, 21, decreasing all the way to less than 10 plants per meter squared for the maturity groups 5 and 6. What's really interesting to me is that essentially there's very, very little difference in 95% of the asymptotic yield from a maturity group 1 to a maturity group 6 soybean. With that in mind, the next question we asked was, how much light energy does it actually take to reach these asymptotic yield values? And to look at this, we went in and we measured the fraction of light intercepted 3 to 4 times per week, and from this we were able to interpolate and estimate the amount of light intercepted daily throughout the growing season. We also had measurements of incident radiation, and we summed the amount of light energy intercepted from emergence until the R6 stage of soybean maturity, which is usually about 2 weeks before physiological maturity. Just as the plant is beginning to turn a little bit yellow in the canopy, it's still green at that point. The seeds are at the full seed size. Our data from this are shown in this slide. Let me set this up a little bit. We have relative yield plotted on the y-axis versus the cumulative amount of photosynthetically active radiation, SIPR. So this represents the amount of light energy that's intercepted from emergence into the R6 stage of development. The relative yield here over these 3 years of the experiment are, for any given plot, for any given treatment for that year, we expressed it relative to the highest yielding treatment for that year. So it's just a fraction of the highest yielding treatment for that year. Certainly we don't have a linear response as you would expect from the historical view of what we've discussed before. We have this very curvilinear response. What this data from this graph, the different treatments are maturity groups 00 through 6 soybean grown in 19 centimeter rows at a population density between 10 and 100 plants per square meter. So a wide range of maturity, a wide range of population density. But once we reach a cumulative intercepted photosynthetically active radiation of around 605 megajoules per meter squared, we've reached 90% of the yield potential, 90% of the relative yield for this particular experiment. 731 gives us 95% of the asymptote in this experiment. Anything above that gave relatively little yield response. Similar experiments were conducted and reported by De Bruin and Peterson in 2009. They were looking at relative yield versus SIPR, very similar to what was reported in the previous slide. Their data is shown here. They were comparing old and new soybean cultivars and their yield response. They concluded, based upon research conducted in Iowa on 30-inch rows, 76 centimeters, I believe, something like that, 76-centimeter rows, that it required about 475 megajoules per meter squared to have 95% of this asymptotic yield. We've conducted similar experiments with corn, looking at the amount of yield that would be realized with CIFAR values from emergence into black layer. This was conducted over a wide range of corn hybrids ranging in maturity from around 85 to 120 days at different population densities. Again, we see a curvilinear response, certainly not with the amount of curvature that you saw in soybean, but nevertheless, it required approximately 700 megajoules of light energy to reach this 95% of the asymptotic yield. Our questions then come down to how much solar radiation do we have available during a frost-free growing season. For soybean, we've seen that roughly we need about 700 megajoules per meter squared to reach 95% of our maximum yield of our asymptotic yield. For soybeans, for corn, also somewhere around 700 to 800 to reach physiological maturity and reach 95% of this asymptotic yield. We looked at long-term weather data at several different regions in the U.S. from 36 to 98 years. We looked at, we're able to calculate the frost-free growing season when there was less than a 5% chance of having freezing temperatures during that growing season. And our regions that we looked at included the southeastern United States, the upper Midwest, the northern Great Plains, and the Mid-South production area. And from that, our estimates for the cumulative amount of solar radiation that was available during the frost-free growing season were approximately, and these are PAR values, not total solar values, PAR values of around 2,100 megajoules in the southeast, 1,600 megajoules in the Midwest, 1,560 in the northern Great Plains, and around 2,000 megajoules in the Mid-South. So roughly in the southern United States, we're to reach 95% of our asymptotic yield, we need about half the amount of available solar radiation that we receive during the growing season. And even in the Midwest and northern Great Plains, we have available substantially more than, based upon this research, is actually required to reach those asymptotic yields. So are we wasting solar radiation in row crop production? And I'm not sure I have the final answer on that, but let me just review some of the points we had and maybe come up with some general ideas and conclusions about that. First, in general, solar radiation interception can be managed somewhat by row spacing, population density, crop maturity, and canopy architecture. Crop growth is usually considered proportional to that cumulative amount of solar radiation. For each amount of solar radiation intercepted, when conditions are optimum for the crop with regards to water availability and nutritional aspects, you could expect a proportional increase in crop mass and perhaps yield. The cumulative radiation and crop response that we've discussed has shown that the yield of full-season soybean and corn does not respond to increased cumulative radiation above a threshold. So this new idea that there's a threshold beyond a threshold of yield response to cumulative radiation is really in conflict with the more or less the historical view on this concept. Short-season soybean and corn have similar yields as full-season crops, with less light used, less light intercepted, and less water use. I didn't present any of the water data that we've estimated on this, but there are also significant water savings without sacrificing yield using these short-season crops as well. There may be cropping opportunities for utilizing this available solar radiation. And this perhaps comes back directly to the solar corridor. I think it leaves open some innovative multiple cropping strategies, whether that includes just a different cropping sequence, but it may also include some intercropping or some relay cropping as well. And with that, I'll close and be able to hope to answer any questions you may have now or at the end of the symposium.
We have time for one or two questions.
Yes. I recognize you, Hugh.
So you're looking at total cumulative solar radiation interception over the season. It seems like in the case of soybean, there's a pretty fundamental difference between getting more radiation early because it increases the plankton population, or you increase growth rate, and getting more radiation later because you delayed maturity. When you look at yield formation in soybean, it seems like what happens before pasta almost doesn't matter, right? As long as you've got full canopy cover by the time you're determining how many pods are going to be there. So if you were to break it out and say, well, maybe early season solar radiation interception doesn't matter at all, but late season maybe does, is that maybe going to change this threshold?
So the question basically is, if we divide that total amount of cumulative radiation into vegetative stages and reproductive stages, does it change the threshold values? And my co-author is here, Jeff Edwards. Jeff, this a large part of this research was part of Jeff's research dissertation research for his doctorate. And Jeff, we did that. We looked at different stages of development from vegetative to reproductive, and I don't believe we saw much difference. Is that correct? That's correct. We saw the same thresholds. I guess the big difference, to answer your question more directly, Hugh, is that you see much less variation in the amount of solar radiation that's intercepted during the reproductive period. The reproductive period, if you take that from, say, beginning seed fill until maturity, shows much less difference than if you were to look at the difference in the amount of solar radiation intercepted from emergence to R5.
If it's short, we can do it. Otherwise, we'll hold off and have an hour. Very good.
Larry, the data you presented on corn contrasts very strongly in terms of the shape of the curve, what Mitchell used to call the old C, or efficiency factor. Do you attribute that to basic maize genetics, basic maize canopy architecture? You have a full range of maize maturity.
Yes. If I didn't show these data, if we were to look at just total biomass for maize, it would be a completely linear response. Harvest index changes with maize. Harvest index also changes for soybean as you increase the amount of solar radiation intercepted during the growing season, but it's much less, and the response of total biomass to cumulative radiation is also very curvilinear, but not so in maize.
Thank you very much. All right. Thank you.